Yeah, it's like I said, it's like gravy through a sieve. Like all of a sudden it just gets clogged with a piece of delicious gravy. There's nothing we can do. Everybody, welcome to episode 310 of the Rated NA podcast. I am Ash.
I'm Scott.
Matt is not here. He's getting ready to go to San Diego Comic-Con, where I am getting ready to go to as well. But thanks for hanging out with us today, everybody.
Yay, we are back. I'm back, I guess. Everyone is back.
Well, no, it's honestly, for our listeners that have been hanging with us, it's been just a crazy busy couple months. I've been traveling like basically nonstop. I'm currently recording from a garage in my friend's house in Northern California. So traveling for a couple of weeks, and then I'm going to Comic-Con and then traveling finally back home. But I've been away a lot, and I know Matt has as well. So it's been hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, typical work stuff and just trying to get everything figured out. Schedules, time zones, all kinds of crazy stuff. But we're getting there, man. We haven't gone anywhere.
We have all sorts of awesome stuff planned that we cannot wait to share with you, and we will do that when the time is right. But Scott, what is on this week's show?
So on this week's show, there's all kinds of, as you guys are getting ready for Comic-Con, there's all kinds of Marvel news and Marvel reviews that you will be sharing with us today. I've got video games on lockdown for this podcast. I'll be talking about Detroit Become Human, Vampire, depending on how you read words. Squids on Nintendo Switch. You'll be talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well as the Marvel
Television Universe?
Yeah, Television Universe. And then we'll just probably shoot the shit a little bit and then call it a day.
That sounds like a good plan to me. I'm so excited to talk about this stuff since we haven't recorded in a number of weeks, I think, since our E3 episode. So it's been a very long time for us, but there's stuff I've been like really chomping at the bit to talk about. So this is exciting.
Nice. Let's see. We usually don't do this anymore, but like what is going on?
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, traveling a bit for work. So I'm up in Northern California for work stuff, which is cool. And I'm visiting my best friend that I've known since I was three this week, which is really cool. It's always good to see him. So always great to visit lifelong friends. And then next week I travel down south to San Diego for San Diego Comic-Con, which is going to be super exciting. And we're going to be out there for a week recording with some past guests and with some new people and just running around eating good food and chatting with all sorts of fun, creative folks. So that's exciting. And other than that, man, things have been doing good. You know, everything's fine. Not playing as many games as I would like, but honestly, I've been listening to a lot of gaming podcasts in my off time, and there's not a ton that I'm like super eager to play right now. The only big one that I've kind of missed is God of War, but I kind of feel like I want to play that on the PlayStation Pro, so I want to wait until I get a Pro.
Yeah, so you know, we're in the middle of July, right? July is not like a super hot time for new game releases,
right?
And I think that's partially where some of this podcast will be coming from, because we'll be talking about some things that you can do right now while waiting for the next crop of games to come out in this holiday season. I've been trying to game a little bit, and you're going to laugh at me, but just stay with me here for a second.
Sure.
I went back to The Division.
I'm not going to laugh at you. That was a good game, man. Like, I tease you on Slack all the time because you're always trying to get me to play, and I'm like, dude, I can't play anything but Overwatch right now.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I came back to the game because, obviously, I think a lot of people did. A couple things happened. At E3, they announced Division 2. They announced that there would be a beta for Division 2. They announced version update 1.8.2 for The Division. This update introduced new challenges called shield challenges that you can do in the game, and a new zone that you can explore, and just some other goodies and stuff like that too. The offer has since expired, but they also gave everybody a goodie pack that if you were to grab it at the beginning of July, and open it, it would drop a bunch of end game gear on you that would allow you to quickly skip to the highest world tier, end game tier in the game, and then do everything, you know, that you can do at that point in the game. So
that's pretty cool.
It wouldn't give you maxed out gear, but it would give you sort of the minimum requirement to go into world tier 5, which is the highest you can go, and then participate with everybody else in the various, you know, challenges and things that are in the game. The other thing that happened is that the Division came to Xbox Game Pass. So a bunch of people were probably jumping into the game for the first time, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, the game kind of feels just like a big, you know, last send off going away party for the title. So I've been spending some free time jumping into the game and completing the Shield challenges, which are, you know, kind of like structured like achievements where you need to kill so many named enemies. You need to go do things in the Dark Zone. You need to unlock the base of operations, which is like the first thing you do in the game. Mm-hmm. And by doing this, it'll give you high-end gear for the current game, and it will also unlock some cosmetic type items for Division 2, you know, through your Ubisoft account.
So it's kind of really prompting people to prep themselves for Division 2, which is looking fantastic. I like the setting for that a lot. Correct. So I'm really eager to see how that's going to be.
Yeah. So the thing that I just wanted to quickly touch upon with this game is I remember we played the game when it first came out, played it like hit it real hard for 3 months.
We did it like 3 or 4 nights a week for like a couple months.
Yeah. We played through all the base game content. And then I remember the first thing they did was they announced that raid boss, which really caught a lot of people off guard because it was, in my opinion, felt very impossible for the average player to complete. Like as soon as we walked into the room, you know, we were killed. Right.
Right. Right.
Since then I've returned to the game, and between the stuff that has been free updates and the stuff that has been, season pass content updates, I feel like this game has thrown everything at the wall and has really given people at this point a way to play the game based on the way that you want to play the game, which is super great and probably part of the reason why I was able to come back and enjoy it so much. So like if you're a PvP player, I think there's 3 different places in the game where you can do PvP now, including the Dark Zone.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then if you want to do PvE, there's, you know, literally 3 different places you can do that now. This most recent update added a region of the map, a PvE region of the map called Westside Piers. And they've basically changed the gameplay in that part of the map to be super dynamic. So basically, I would say about every 1 to 2 minutes, enemies just spawn around you and it's constant action, constant combat. There are live objectives that kind of switch out every 5 minutes or so. There's always a rolling mission for you to complete, like an ambient side quest style mission that you can complete in the environment. And then they also added in that area a horde mode, which I think we would have really enjoyed had we been playing at the time, you know.
So that's cool. I really like when companies really take what the community wants and changes the community are asking for and kind of iterate on their game. And the idea of games as a service is really super appealing to me. So I'm glad to see they've added all this stuff. I know that stuff that we said that we really wanted when we were playing it, just to kind of just be able to shoot nonstop and laugh with your buddies without that constant gear grind. So that's cool. I'll obviously be there playing with you guys, Division 2. So I'm ready.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I think the hardest thing for us was just dealing with PvP and like not wanting to be, you know, griefed by other players all the time. And now there's a way to do that. And I really hope to see some of that stuff come into Division 2, and I think it will. So not quite a review, I just wanted to touch upon that and like, you know, how personally I was impressed by, you know, a game that we all loved at the start and then definitely fell off of right away. And now it's just a completely different game, which is kind of crazy.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you want to quickly dive into some brief news? And
let's
then
do the news.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of Marvel Cinematic Universe news. Our listeners probably are aware I'm a huge fan of everything that Marvel's putting out in their cinematic universe. The reason I added this to the news is this just dropped like 15 minutes ago. So
oh, wow.
The Black Widow film is definitely going forward. That had already been announced, obviously, with Scarlett Johansson. But the director of the Black Widow film is Kate Shortland, who is an Australian director, obviously a female director. And, you know, she beat out a lot of other potential directors for this job. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen with this with Black Widow film. She hasn't done Kate Shortland. I looked her up on IMDb. She hasn't done a ton of stuff. She has just really, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, she's done some films, like huge, big films. So I shouldn't say not a lot of stuff, but in the grand scheme of things, she hasn't directed like, you know, 20, 30 films. It's a handful, but it's still a lot. So I'm eager to see how this is going to work out. Other little tidbits of information around the MCU. Spider-Man has a title, the new Spider-Man film. It's called Far From Home. And apparently in this Spider-Man film, he is going to be overseas. So he's not going to still be in space. If you've seen it, Infinity War, spoiler. Mm-hmm. He's going to be overseas someplace on a school trip is what the information is saying about Far From Home. So we'll get to see Spider-Man, you know, maybe facing off against a rogues gallery of UK villains or something like that, which could be kind of cool.
Are there UK villains, different villains in different regions of the world?
There are, but honestly, the only book I ever read growing up that was based in the UK was Excalibur, which was a X-Men spinoff book with like Shadowcat and Captain Britain and a couple other characters. And their rogues gallery was just awful. So I'm hoping that their rogues gallery makes its way over to Spider-Man Far From Home. We kind of know, it's been revealed that Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be playing Mysterio, which is actually one of my favorite Spider-Man villains from when I was a kid. He has the big fishbowl on his head and he does like magic essentially, but like fake magic, like Siegfried and Roy magic, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just a very different dynamic. I would love to see just a very weird kind of off the wall Spider-Man versus Mysterio, you know, in the Royal Palace type of situation, which would be really cool.
Weird. Okay.
Very weird. Other little bit of information is Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is being written by James Gunn, and the final draft, or at least the final version of the main, I guess, like, let me rephrase that. A final draft has been completed by him. So the film is written. That's about as far as it's gotten. So it's really cool to see this movie moving forward. We obviously don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of stuff that happened in Infinity War to the Guardians of the Galaxy that has yet to be resolved. So we have to kind of wait and see what happens to the Guardians first before we get to see what happens in Guardians 3.
Mm-hmm.
But James Gunn did also say that this is, you know, it for him and the Guardians of the Galaxy after the third film. So it's interesting. You know, I'm eager to see what happens with that. So
awesome.
That's my little bit of MCU news.
Cool. And then we have some convention news.
Yeah. So a couple little things. Matt and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con. We are going to produce a handful of episodes from the convention like we do for the past several years. So if you like that kind of stuff, live recording, we'll be doing that. We'll also have a number of special mini episodes with some great guests. Those aren't 100% lined up yet, so I don't want to make any promises, but they are some past ones that you guys have really enjoyed and some new ones as well. So we will have those in your feeds in the coming weeks, which will be super cool. And the other thing is, I believe all three of us are going to be at PAX West.
I believe
which
so
is,
too.
Which is about, what, 8 weeks away at this point? Something crazy like that?
Oh my gosh, don't remind me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. We may have some panels. We'll probably on the next episode have some panel information for you guys. We did submit some stuff. Who knows? You know, they don't really let you know until maybe about 6 weeks out until your panel, if your panels get accepted. But we may have some panels. Otherwise, we'll just be doing live shows and doing interviews and fun stuff like that with also some great people. But anyway, the reason I'm saying all this is I wanted our listeners to know that there's a shitload of content coming. Hang in there. Thank you for your patience. We very much appreciate it. So
yeah, we're not done.
No, we're not.
Still
we're
not just
old and tired.
Yep. That's fair, right? We're still here.
We're just slow.
We're doing what we can do. Right. I'm excited for PAX West because I'm here, right?
Yeah, you're in the area now. Are you gonna crash in the hotel with us and tell your wife and kid to like stuff it?
maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
might be more of a family affair. You know, like getting towards the end of the weekend, but.
Right.
Should be good times. I'm looking forward to it. You'd be surprised to hear that I'm looking forward to I hope Division 2 will be there.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I hope Anthem will be there. I don't know if that's going to be a thing.
I don't know if we're soon enough for Anthem yet
too
on
soon.
The show floor.
Too soon.
They're still hiring their events person from the information you sent me, so that'd be cutting
fair,
it pretty close.
Fair enough.
I don't even think they have a community person at this point at BioWare. So who knows what's going on?
Well, I mean, I know some people that can produce some audio content for them if they're...
Hey, just ask, guys. You guys want us to do some interviews? Just let us know.
Yeah. BioWare base.
Just like old times.
Old times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is that our news?
That's it for our news. It was just a brief little catch up.
Yeah. I'm sure there were other things. I know... I always try to keep an eye on our email, like some kind of fun time things, but I'll mention that later on in the review section that I can add on to
that
something else.
Sounds good.
Cool.
So let's quickly jump into a handful of reviews. The first is going to be for Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I don't think you've seen, Scott, right?
I have not.
So this is going to be entirely spoiler free. So it's more going to be impressions and general tone and characters and that kind of stuff. So I'll start off by saying I really enjoyed Ant-Man and the Wasp. The thing that's really interesting about it is it takes place, from what I understand, a few months before the events of Infinity War. So if you're interested in like where Ant-Man was during Infinity War, that does get answered by Ant-Man and the Wasp. And there's a very good reason why Ant-Man is not in Infinity War. Definitely stay through to the end credits to find that out. But fantastic stuff in terms of the timeline. It does a really great job of really making the character of Scott Lang even more likable. So I found him, obviously Paul Rudd is an incredibly charismatic guy. So likable from the get-go, but they did such a great job. And maybe now I'm just like a big softy cause I'm a dad, but he has this great relationship with his daughter in this second film that is really his motivation for everything that he does. And so I guess it's not really a spoiler, but at the end of Civil War, you know, Ant-Man was in the big fight with the Avengers in Germany, and he ends up getting arrested, and you find out that Captain America ends up breaking him out. So Captain America breaks everybody out, and a couple of the characters, Ant-Man and Hawkeye, they make deals with the government because they have families. So Hawkeye says, yeah, you know, I'll make a deal, whatever, just don't send me to jail. I want to be with my family. And Ant-Man does the same thing. And that's revealed in just like one throwaway line in Infinity War, if you missed it. So Ant-Man and Hawkeye sign these deals. But the character, Scott Lang, he's actually under house arrest for, I think, 2 or 3 years straight. So he can't leave his house. And so the film opens with him under house arrest. And then obviously events unfold that make him kind of break out of his own house and defy that house arrest, but because that wouldn't be a very exciting film if he's just stuck in the house for 2 hours. But it's interesting, and you know, he decides to give up superheroing to be a good dad, and they did a really fantastic job of painting this relationship not only with his daughter, but also with his ex-wife and his ex-wife's new husband. And there's not this like weird fake tension that happens in a lot of film, you know, like between the ex-wife, and it was very just, you could tell all the parents of his kid all had the kid's best interest in mind.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And it was very like just warm. You could see like this genuine like affection in the family, which I think carried over very well. And I'm trying to avoid like major plot points I could be describing an episode of This Is Us, but so in terms of like the superhero stuff, the relationship between Ant-Man and Wasp is absolutely fantastic. They touch on sort of where they went after the first film and how close they had grown and so on and so forth. They did a really great job with the Ant-Man tech. So watching them grow and shrink, and the fight choreography was just infinitely better than the first movie. Just some of the very creative things that they came up with growing and shrinking was just unbelievable. Wasp shrinking down to tiny size, and like, you know, they showed in the trailer, so like running off the edge of a knife and like backflipping and, you know, diving through car windows, all just in really high speed, just really fantastic action. The antagonist of Ghost, who you see in the trailer, has a really unique power set. She can phase, which as a kid, the character of Shadow Cat was one of my favorites, and she had the phasing power. So it was really cool to see the MCU version of phasing and what a person can do with phasing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to become intangible and, you know, move through objects and using the power of phasing to like phase into a living person's like body to like scare them.
Right.
It's just crazy. Becoming invisible, just all sorts of really cool stuff that we haven't seen yet.
That also seems like a great foil for the protagonists, given their abilities.
It is.
As well.
It is. It's perfect because even though Ant-Man and Wasp can shrink really tiny, it doesn't matter how small they can be if they can't see their targets. So she was a great antagonist, and it did a really wonderful job of not falling into the trap that a lot of the MCU films fall into, of having a main villain that's kind of disposable, kind of mustache twirly, and also one that doesn't have a really clear motivation. You know, sometimes they're just a little bad to be bad. Mm-hmm. But Ghost has a really great origin, and you kind of identify with her. She's more of like the Killmonger level of villain, where she actually has like a really good arc, and you kind of feel for her. And it doesn't end the way you might be thinking in Ant-Man and the Wasp. So,
okay.
So yeah, there's also great stuff. Michelle Pfeiffer plays Janet Van Dyne, who is Hank Pym's wife, who was lost in the negative zone, or not negative zone, lost in the quantum realm. And so a lot of it is a rescue tale of trying to figure out how to get her back, which is also in the trailer. But that was done very, very well. And honestly, I have just nothing but positive things to say about it. It was fun. It was funny. I laughed out loud a handful of times. Obviously, coming from a film like Infinity War, where there is the stakes are just so high, it's interesting to see everything kind of dialed back to sort of like the original handful of Marvel films, where, you know, there's a mission, you got to go on the mission, you got to rescue the person. It was just much smaller than the galaxy is going to lose, you know, half of its population.
Right. And it can't be that all the time. Otherwise it'll just be too much, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But still, I think it did a great job of tying it all into that big cinematic universe. And like I said, the end credit scenes are important. So stick around for those. But anyway, Ant-Man and the Wasp, absolutely fantastic. Check it out. I really enjoyed it. Maybe in my top six. It's
wow.
Up there.
Wow. Yeah. Those are fighting words.
I know. I can't ever really rank them, because at this point there's, I think, 18 or 19 films, and that's just way too hard of an undertaking. So, but it's up there. It's good.
Cool. Well, that's good. It's always good to have, I mean, clearly they continue to produce movies that top the box office all the time. Right. And I think that's fairly impressive on its own. For things like that to happen. So that's crazy. Did you see that, on a related note, that Incredibles overtook Finding Dory for domestic box office?
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I saw that as well. I saw Incredibles too, which was fun.
Yeah. And when that happened, I just thought, like, you know, when Finding Dory came out and broke the record, I was like, well, that's not going to be broken. Right. Like, cause that was clearly a huge movie. And then Incredibles 2 comes out, and then a year later, it's like, well, we broke it again.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's impressive in itself. Let's see. Let's find some games to talk about.
Sure. Let's do it.
So the first thing that we'll talk about is the game Squids has come to Nintendo Switch. Squids comes from The Game Bakers, who is a fantastic indie studio based in France, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
We've met with them a number of times. They've made some excellent games in Squids, Combo Crew, and I think the one that landed with a lot of people was Fury, which is sort of like a boss Fury rush game that everybody really enjoyed. They have brought the game Squids to the Nintendo Switch. I feel like it's sort of the perfect home for a game like this. I think we were talking recently about how the Switch is a really great place for indies right now, just given its, you know, install base and kind of the demographic, the wide demographic that the console or that the system sort of appeals to. I think I've played Squids on three different platforms at this point. I feel like I've played it on DS. I think I may have played it on mobile as well. And now I had a chance to check it out on Switch. Honestly, I feel like Switch might be the best place to play the game because it runs like super fast and buttery smooth. The Game Bakers make some fantastic games, I think, because of their attention to detail. They're sort of...
Their stuff is so good. I still play Combo Crew on the plane, like almost every time I fly, because it doesn't require an internet connection. Mm-hmm. And the game is pretty much unbeatable. So it's like, I'll beat like one level of a tower finally and be like, oh, thank goodness. But their stuff is so good.
Yeah, I think they're sort of students of classic games, and they really pay a lot of attention to detail of gameplay mechanics. And I think that results in some really fantastic games, you know, in addition to having really good, you know, artists and music and all that other stuff added to it.
Yeah, I mean, their pedigree is, you know, old school Ubisoft, like they're the big, big, big Ubisoft titles. So they definitely know what they're doing. I love like a lot of their, from what I understand, a lot of their games are designed sort of postal service style, where they have a lot of remote people kind of submitting stuff, which I just think is just so cool, even though they do have a studio space above a French bakery. they really do. It's really cool.
Can't make that up.
No, it's, yeah, I love it. But I think that that's just great. And I think that just shows that you can make a AAA experience, you know, if you have the skills, no matter where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, like I said, a game like this is perfect on the Switch. You can play it casually. You can also play it for mastery because there's tons of different challenges to complete, even after you complete an individual level. And the game is pretty extensive, too, with a lot of customization and things to do. It's a tactical game. It translates from a touchscreen in the sense where, it's got like an Angry Bird style game mechanic where you kind of fling your characters at the opponents to damage them. But at the same time, it's also tactical in the sense that it is turn-based and you are trying to fight other enemies like on a, you know, like on a 2D map from a top-down perspective.
Right.
And of course, as the name suggests, Squids, it is, you know, under the sea themed, so that makes it kind of pleasant and aesthetically pleasing because it's got
it's a beautiful game to look at. I've been a fan of it since it first came out.
Yeah, lots of different characters, customizations. They're upgradable. There's different challenges, so it's something that is definitely worth worth checking out. Worthy of its place on the Switch, and happy to see that they're bringing the game to more platforms so people can play it.
Very cool. Very cool.
Do you want to do another game before we move on to
which one is next?
The other thing I can mention quickly is I just saw an email, another game is coming to Switch that we were fans of, which is Hand of Fate 2.
I love the Hand of Fate series. I felt the 2 was really challenging, so I didn't get as far as I would have liked in Hand of Fate 2, but I love the mechanic. I love that game. So Switch is, I'm very impressed with all their indie offerings, and I actually almost bought one before my trip this time, but I was like, realistically, I'm not going to have that much time to play games just with everything I had going on.
True.
I've been just playing my mobile offerings.
Yeah, so I just wanted to quickly mention that because there's, you know, a ton of good stuff. Obviously, we really enjoyed Hand of Fate 2, but it is not for the faint of heart because it is, like you said, very challenging. Just like you, I did not get as far as I wanted to only because I was trying to sort of gold star all the levels as I proceeded through them. So that's difficult in itself.
And finally, you were like, this is going to take me a year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I play it sort of at more of a casual pace. So I'll try to master a level and then I'll go play something else and come back to it like, you know, in a couple weeks and try another level after that.
This is Felicia Day, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
Let's see. Let's talk about Vampyr, which
Vampyr
or Vampyr. It's spelled with a Y, like because it's
if you're a Buffy fan, Tales of the Vampyr.
Tales of the Vampyr. Yeah, exactly. Yep. There's sort of a special place in my heart for Vampyr style games and Vampyr stuff.
Hey, you and Matt were old school Vampyr players, right?
Yeah, we were not necessarily doing all the LARPing, but we did play the card game that was based on the World of Darkness, which was called at the time was called Jihad, but they have since changed it to Vampyr: The Eternal Struggle for probably obvious reasons.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic card game, and so a lot of our love for that stuff is sort of rooted in the World of Darkness, and so for me. Coming into a game like this, the appeal for me was, you know, I just love that material in games. The game comes from Don't Nod, who, you know, obviously they've made Life is Strange. Before that, they made a game called Remember Me, which I really loved. We talked about that before. We saw that at PAX, right? You saw that at PAX?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think because I feel like a lot of people might be only familiar with Life is Strange, but Remember Me was a sort of an action fighting game based around like doing combos.
Fan of Remember Me when it came out, and we actually talked about it on several episodes. And it's interesting because you're right, like a lot of people forget all the things that Don't Nod have done, And, you know, I think the future for them is very bright. I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of what's next. Cause I know they've announced, Life is Strange 2, and that's coming out relatively soon. So
if there is time, that's something else that we could potentially talk about is the, you know, the adventures of, oh my God, what is the name of that game?
It's like Captain Awesome or Mr. Amazing or Amazing Adventures. I know what you're talking about.
I feel terrible for forgetting, but it's the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit. So
there we go.
We'll jump to that if there's time, or we'll save it for next week. But Vampyre is, it's sort of a blend. It's a hybrid of sort of an action game. There are role-playing elements in the sense where you can upgrade your character to your playstyle. So it's got some RPG elements. The thing that surprised me about the game is that I was expecting something like, you know, like Dark Souls or The Surge, where it's sort of more hardcore survival style. But in this game, it is also very dialogue heavy, which I really appreciate in a game like this, because, you know, I come from a place where I really enjoyed, what the hell was that game called? Like Vampire. There was an Activision vampire game, which was like a cult classic, like Vampire the Masquerade or something like that. And it was a PC game, but anybody who knows what it is knows what I'm talking about. But, you know, similarly, it was a game that you could go into a lot of combat if you wanted to, or you could spend a lot of time talking to people and figuring out what you want to do. So in this game, you play as, I believe his name is Dr. Jonathan Crane, I want to say. Oh, Jonathan Reed. I'm sorry. So the doctor's name is Jonathan Reed. He was he's a doctor. This takes place in post-World War I era London. Right at the beginning of the game, he becomes a vampire. And so one of the themes of the game is, you know, his struggle between being a doctor and being a vampire, right? Because he gets put into situations where he is, you know, he can heal somebody, but he can also feast on their blood as well. I don't know. What do you know about what was going on in London post-World War I in terms of, you know, Spanish flu diseases, things of that nature?
It's pretty crazy. Like, that era in history is one of the darkest, most depressing chunks of history that I've had the displeasure of studying. Because, what happened was, 1918, there was tons of people, you know, died during World War I. I don't even know at this point how many millions and millions of people died off the top of my head anymore. But right in the same year that World War I was wrapping up, there was a massive influenza outbreak, mainly due to just the poor conditions that existed all throughout Europe at the time. And so almost the same number of people died from the flu that died from the war. And so there was really nobody most of Europe at the time that didn't know somebody who had just recently died within that four-year time period. So from 1914 to 1918, people were dropping like flies. And it was just a very sad time to be alive. And of course that carries over heavily into what ends up, you know, fueling World War II. So you have not a very long period of time between World War I and World War II. And during that time, it was sort of the world trying to get back on its feet, but it also gave rise to a lot of, you know, zealots and really crazy, crazy, not so nice people. So it was a bad time to be in London. Yeah. It was probably a really bad time to be a doctor. Medicine was still garbage.
Yeah.
It had gotten a little bit better, but still, it was still at a point where, you know, most of the time amputation was the route you would go if someone is, you know, mildly wounded. And a lot of, opiates were becoming very popular. People were becoming addicted to drugs. It was a shitty, shitty, shitty time. And also big industrialization hit the UK during that time period. So it was filthy, just filthy soot everywhere, dirt, just grime. It would probably be one of the worst eras in history to be a doctor, in the worst places to be a doctor.
Yeah. So it's amazing. And this is what I love about your knowledge of history. You nailed the date. I didn't tell you what the year of the game was, and you said it. You're like, it's 1918. And you can see that it kind of sets up perfectly the context for vampires to exist in a place where nobody would think anything of it. Because a lot of what kind of gets explained away in the game is like, you know, and, you know, obviously people are being bit, right, and turned into vampires, and people are, you know, there's ghouls and things acting crazy, and everybody's just like, oh, it must be the flu, or I must be suffering from the flu, and therefore I'm just perceiving crazy things, you know, happening in the world around me. And, like, you know, the setting that you described, you know, they nail it in the game.
That's great. That's awesome. Know,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it is, like, thinking about times in history where you could get away with being a vampire and no one would really think twice about you running around the streets, like, killing people, that's probably the time. Because there were so many dead people in 1918 across Europe that it was like, you know, like, it was just, that's what happened. Everybody was dying.
Yeah.
So
that, yeah. I mean, it's perfect. The setup is perfect, right? You spend a lot of time talking to your base ultimately becomes this hospital. There's tons of people to talk to. They all have backstories. You can learn about them if you want. You can help them with side quests if you want. If you want to go this route, you can actually kill every NPC in the game, and the blood you get from them is like additional XP that you can use to upgrade your character.
Oh, wow.
So this is sort of where the kind of the Dark Souls-y piece of this game comes in, where you can take on as much experience as you feel like you need in order to complete the game, to level up, right? So if you are struggling with the game, in theory, you could go and kill somebody, get additional XP, upgrade your character, right?
Yeah.
So that you can go back into the combat scenarios and, you know, have upgraded abilities. You do get XP from just, you know, killing the monsters in the game world, but these are faster ways to progress in the game.
It's so interesting. So you can actually kind of screw yourself by killing an NPC that you might need for a future quest or something of that nature.
Yes.
And break, you know, break potential narrative of the game.
Yeah. I mean, it is gated somewhat behind your ability to charm somebody. That's kind of like a game mechanic as well. So you can charm somebody, and at that point you are able to, embrace them and you know, collect that XP from them. But yes, you're right. You can totally shut down entire districts.
Very cool. So in terms of graphics and progression and just overall, like, what is the combat system like in Vampire?
So it is like an action, mostly melee game. There are some long range weapons you can use, but we're talking about like swords and, you know, a dodge mechanic and having blood abilities that are both offensive, defensive, and passive. It kind of scratches that itch for me of things you would expect from a Vampire game.
Awesome. I've actually heard a lot of really good things about this. A couple other podcasts have done Game of the Year sort of nominees so far, and this has actually been on a couple of lists in their RPG category because it is, I guess, pretty well done and pretty well produced. Now, I'm assuming this is Don't Nod. I'm assuming they didn't dev this, unless I'm wrong. Do you know if they dev this?
They did. They devved it, and the publisher is Focus Home Interactive.
Interesting. I wonder, I'm really curious how big the Don't Nod team is, because I feel like they're working on a lot of things at once. And I feel like this game kind of snuck up, like, with very little hullabaloo. But I'm a little bit more out of the loop than I used to be. But I don't feel like this was like a really hyped. Maybe it's because of their publisher. It wasn't like a Square, you know, Square Enix, you know, $20 million in advertising type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for the broad audience, this would be like just a sort of a solid, you know, 7 or 8 kind of game. But I think this game is, to me, feels like a cult game, a niche game. To a certain audience, this will have a super hardcore appeal. It's dark, it's moody, there's conversations, there's combat. And for me, it just hits all those right notes of being like the right kind of vampire game that I want to play.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad you're digging it. It might be something I add to my never-ending list of stuff that I may or may not get to, but I'm glad you like it. I'm actually surprised Matt hasn't played this yet. I know. Are you playing on Xbox?
I am. I'm playing on Xbox.
Yeah. Xbox. Okay. I was going to ask you for an Xbox or a PC, but cool. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you like it. Yeah. Like I said, a big fan of Don't Nod, so I'm glad that they're making another good one.
Yeah, and I'm willing at this point, you know, I'll try anything that they produce, because the, you know, for me at this point, they've got a good track record, and
they were really nice dudes too. Like, mm-hmm. The team was really, we talked to them a number of years ago before Life is Strange came out, or maybe right after the first episode came out at a PAX. And they were just such really warm, friendly guys that I was like, oh, I can support these guys. You know, I can stand by them.
Yeah, for sure. And this game, you know, hits the right tone. The setting is good. Story is interesting. I find myself being pulled back to it, even though I play other games in between. So I think that's a good testament to the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's talk Luke Cage season 2.
This is going to be spoiler free. If I do hit any spoilers, I'll give you a big heads up, but I don't think I'm going to have to give away spoilers to talk about this. Again, I'll preface this by saying, I really loved Luke Cage season 2. I told you guys on Slack that I think I liked season 2, like, honestly, about 5 times more than season 1. And I know that makes it sound like I didn't like season 1 of Luke Cage. That's not really the case. I enjoyed it, but I felt like the second half was pretty weak, and I felt like kind of character development kind of stalled a bit in Luke Cage season 1.
Agreed.
And it just got to be a little, I felt like the second half of the first season was just a bad season of a show. Like, every once in a while you'll have a great show that just has a bad season. And I felt like the second half of Luke Cage season 1 was just not solid. So I was a little apprehensive going into season 2 of Luke Cage because, you know, you're watching these two, and mm-hmm. they're a big time sink. They can be a bit heavy, especially if you binge them all in sequence. It can be a lot for a binge watching experience. But Luke Cage season 2 was absolutely fantastic. I found myself, you know, waking up really early in the morning before anybody, my family got up, and watching like 2 episodes and staying up late and just like trying to grind through it as fast as I could, because it was just so well written and the character development was so great. And they have this whole, again, I'm going back to, I said the same thing with Ant-Man and the Wasp, but they do a great job of creating these family scenarios for these characters. And in Luke Cage, it revolves around his relationship with his father, who he only kind of briefly mentions in the first season. But you get to learn a lot about Luke Cage's past and kind of why he is, you know, morally the way that he is. If you've seen Defenders, you know that Luke Cage was very opposed to like killing really anyone, even terrible, terrible like assassin ninjas. He didn't want to kill anybody. And you kind of, at the time watching Defenders, you're like, Luke Cage, just snap everybody in half. Quit fucking around, man. Just do what you got to do.
Yeah.
These are devil ninjas, like, do something about it. But you get to learn a little bit more about why, you know, why he is the way he is, which I really appreciated. They also delve a little bit more into his relationship with Rosario Dawson's character Claire. They have a very loving relationship, but it's kind of tremulous. There's a lot going on because they're both, you know, very alpha. And, you know, I think everyone in their life has been in a relationship where they both kind of feel there's a lot of tension because both parties are kind of alpha and they both want different things. And you get to see that a little bit in Luke Cage season 2. Mm-hmm. You know, everything about this, from the music to the acting, the character of Mariah is back in season 2, and she is just wildly, like, some of the best television acting. If she doesn't get nominated, dude, I don't even know. She is so evil and so great in season 2 of Luke Cage that, you know, I could not stop watching her. And
yeah,
like,
she's crazy, man.
Yeah, she's absolutely crazy. And her craziness goes, you know, to level 11 in this series. So it was just, it was perfect. His other antagonist is a character by the name of Bushmaster, who is from the comics, who is in this season 2 running with Jamaican gangs in Harlem. And so you get to see this whole different side of like the Jamaican gang scene and all the different factions vying for control of Harlem, which is really what the whole season's about. But again, unlike a lot of people loved Cottonmouth in season 1, but I feel like Bushmaster is the best. Bushmaster and Mariah, Black Mariah, are the best Marvel cinematic television villains we've ever had. Like, after season 2 of Luke Cage, Bushmaster and Mariah are so well acted and their motivation is so clear, and you don't know really who to root for. It's wonderfully done. And he's evil, but once you figure out why he's evil, you're like, I kind of get why you're evil, man. Like, I kind of get where you're coming from. And if I was you, I'd probably do the same stuff because you've been through some shit and it all makes sense. And even though it kind of suffers a little bit from the Marvel cinematic, like matching up the hero and the villain with the same power set, mm-hmm. How Bushmaster gets his powers, where they're derived from and how he uses them is different. So his powers are similar to Luke Cage, but he didn't go through like the same, you know, powers process that Luke Cage went through. It's a very different situation. And he is like a master of capoeira, I believe it's the kind of the dance. I'm probably got the martial art wrong, but it's sort of like the more dancey style of martial arts that you see in that region of the world. And so watching him, you know, pull off these moves is really fantastic. The fight choreography was great. Like I said, the music was great. I wasn't bored. I wasn't bored for like 1 minute in this.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference from the first season.
Yeah, and I'll also say that Misty Knight has almost as much screen time as Luke Cage in this. So it's like Misty Knight, Luke Cage duo season. And that might be one of the reasons why I liked it so much. Simone Missick stars as Misty Knight, and she's absolutely fantastic in this. She does a great job, and they do a great job of kind of addressing disability because you know, she loses her arm in Defenders. I guess that's a little bit of a spoiler for a show that's been out for like 2 years now, but she loses her arm and it shows how she deals with that disability and also kind of her bouncing back from the disability. There's also some great co-starring of other Defenders heroes, which I don't want to spoil because they kind of pop up as surprises, I guess you could say.
I do want to ask you a question about Misty Knight.
Yeah.
And this is my beef with her character in both season one and the Defenders.
Right.
Do they get her away from this whole thing where she's like always arresting the wrong person and everyone is always telling her shit like, you don't want to know what's going on? And she's like, but I'm a detective. And they're like, we can't tell you what's happening.
There's a bit of that. I think that is just a lot of that is the formula for procedural cop dramas where like you have one cop that's like, you know, they're a good person, but then like everyone else is like kind of screwing with them and like trying to slow up their investigation, and it just feels shitty after a while watching it, you know, because you're like, come on, give me a break, right? I don't feel like there's a lot of that in this season. There is some police department drama. There is some, you know, people trying to kind of step in her way. But I feel like her as a character, she grows a lot in this season. She is really entertaining to watch because she is she's human, but she's almost superhuman in the way that she solves crime. So it's a very cool, almost Sherlock-esque kind of detective situation going on with her, which is just fun. So cool. If you like her at all, you'll enjoy it. And, you know, you get to see her relationships with some of the other Netflix cinematic characters as well, which is fun.
Nice. Speaking of becoming human.
Oh, ooh, good segue.
Yeah. I want to talk for a second about Detroit.
Yes, I've heard good stuff about this, man.
Yeah, so
I've heard visually it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the narrative is kind of gut wrenching, and the choices are very hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also heard in terms of gameplay, there's not a lot going on.
I feel like that is fairly accurate. I would say that. Okay, so to be clear, this is what the hell is the studio? Is it Quantic Dream? I believe it makes these games. So they've done, you know, Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls, Omicron, Nomad Soul, and Indigo Prophecy, which has a different title depending on the region that I can't remember. And now they're back with Detroit Become Human. This game is interesting because it follows the story of three androids who, through various circumstances, begin to struggle with their programming, right?
Right.
One character is sort of a like an assistant or a butler for a very rich artist, and then he kind of undergoes a series of events that kind of lead him on this path to, I don't know, to self-realization, I suppose. There is also a character who is a cop, or, you know, an android that's designed to hunt other androids that go rogue.
Is he RoboCop?
Is he RoboCop? No.
No.
So he's not RoboCop.
He's not RoboCop. Yeah, but he is from Detroit, and he is a robot cop.
That's a good point.
And there's, but he's not RoboCop.
You know what? If there was any RoboCop humor in this game, I completely missed it, and I apologize to anyone that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That my parents took me to see that in the theater when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And that, it's a Paul Verhoeven movie, and it is, you know, watching it now, you're like, holy shit, this is a violent movie. There's a scene where a guy gets, like, acid poured on them and then hit by a car and just explodes.
Yes.
And, like, I watched that as a young person. I'm sure it totally scarred me, but I was super into
it. As kids, we watched all kinds of crazy stuff, you know? Like, I think I saw CB4 in the theater. Like,
there you go.
Come on. Like, all kinds of weird movies.
CB4 was great.
Yeah.
Do you think that film defined you, CB4?
I certainly hope not.
Was that a defining moment?
It was not. I think UHF defined me, if we're totally honest.
Anytime I hear someone quote UHF, I think of you, and I'm like, Scott would be so happy to know this person right now.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So Detroit. Become Human. The final character that you play as is actually it's not a super spoiler, but just kind of a tiny little semi spoiler depending on if you paid attention to the marketing, but you play as Kara, who is the character that they use in the tech demo, I think, when they were debuting the PlayStation 3. Do you remember that short film?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So
wow.
They used that character to kind of sell the technology for Heavy Rain, but they actually made her a character now in Detroit Become Human, which I thought was a great...
Any creepy appearances of Milo, the little weird boy from...
No.
Do you remember Milo?
I do. Yeah.
No, nothing... no, Milo doesn't pop out of a cake or anything?
Nothing like that, unfortunately. Okay. So, yes, you did ask about the gameplay. In terms of the gameplay, it's, you know, the same kind of thing where it's just narrative, mostly narrative driven. So the gameplay is you doing a series of sometimes quick time events, otherwise, you know, weird kind of esoteric controller movements that relate to the things that characters are doing in the game.
So it's a lot of, I don't want to use the term waggling because that's sort of derogatory, but it consists, the main mechanics are quick time events. Correct? Yeah.
And it certainly uses that touchpad on the PlayStation 4 controller to like flip through magazine pages and, you know, start fires or whatever. I don't know. It's like stuff.
Not
like
being
that.
A PS4 guy, I still cannot get used to that thing. No matter how hard I try, it feels just weird to me. I know people that play a lot of PS4 are completely just used to that. But that to me is just such a weird place for it. And it just never feels right.
Yeah. I still find myself clicking the touchpad when I want to push the start button, you know, because they're right next to each other.
Right.
So I'll be like, why isn't the game pausing? And it's like, I'm actually tapping the touchpad. The funny thing that I realized that there was a supporting character in the game who's was very well acted, and I was like, oh, I wonder who this voice actor is, and I look her up, and she was a supporting actress in the television show Almost Human.
Oh wow.
Which is the show that I beat you guys over the head with constantly.
Same with Carl idea. Urban, you said, please watch it. And we said, do we really have to watch this show? And then it got canceled and you hated us.
Yeah. Same idea though. It's like, you know, human cop with android cop, you know, they struggle with defining humanity in that context. And
so the film RoboCop is what you're describing in Detroit.
sure. This is going way off the rails, but that's fine. But yes, the things you said, visually, the game is stunning. It has a futuristic quality to it, which makes it beautiful to look at. There are gut-wrenching moments because we're struggling with, like, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a parent, a family member? You know, where do you draw the line between difficult decisions? I don't want to say too much about the game.
Right.
But obviously you are trying to protect people that are close to you. You know, in the case of the android who is a android hunter, like, you know, should he be hunting his own kind of people? Like, he struggles with things as well.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that talking about humanity and stuff like that, I actually had a conversation about this, and this is roughly on topic, so I apologize. But we were driving last night and I was telling this story that I've told on the podcast before. So if you've been listening for the past like 8 years, you've probably heard us say this story. Mm-hmm. But a long time ago, I went to Comic-Con and there was, they had built an android of the author Philip K. Dick. And it's so memorable to me because it was so weird. But what they did is they took all of his books and all of his diaries and all the interviews he's ever done, and they programmed it into a rudimentary AI. So all the things that this guy has ever said, they put into this AI along with, you know, basic knowledge. And, and they also built an actual Android body that looked like Philip K. Dick. And so the robot Philip K. Dick was on the panel, the Philip K. Dick panel, and the host, I guess the moderator, was asking the robot questions, and the robot was responding in Philip K. Dick's voice, or at least a modulated version of Philip K. Dick's voice. And it was so jarring and so weird. But then I got to think, you know, like, this is going to be technology that exists at some period in history. We're going to be able to map brainwaves and actually have human level intelligence built into these Android bodies. Mm-hmm. And we're far, but we're not like super far. And it's weird because it's like, it's something I've seen with my own eyes that kind of works, you know, like it was there at Comic-Con.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it was so weird.
It's in this game definitely goes into that weirdness, right? The place where it falls short for me is, I consume so much of that media, you know, like, and read so much about like that kind of stuff. You know, so if you've seen iRobot, if you've seen AI, if you kind of like go into that realm of movies that and games and other media that kind of deal with relationships between humans and robots, like, in some respects, this game didn't really tread on any new ground for me or go far enough into the weird, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for, you know, for someone just sitting down to play the game, there's a lot to enjoy. Maybe as a testament to how much I like the game, I still think about the decisions I made and still think about whether or not I want to go back to another playthrough and try different things. Ultimately, the game isn't as much about like the weird stuff that you can explore with, you know, Android humans, but like really relationships between people. Right.
Right.
That's, you know, I think that's the great driver of any game these days. I feel like is sort of that relationship between people and what you do, when you're put in tense situations. So, I think it's a great game. I don't know if it's the best Quantic Dream game, but obviously if you are playing their games already, you certainly should play this one. And, you know, the futuristic tone of it provides a lot to like, and it's a game that, you know, I found myself thinking about even after I played it. So, overall, well, I was very
happy.
That's
already better than a lot of games. So,
yeah,
I mean, the fact that you're thinking about it when it's turned off is, says something really positive about it.
Yeah. Yep. So, it's a recommend for me as well.
Cool. I think, isn't that the bulk of everything for today?
We
did a shorter one, but you know, I'm sitting in a garage and we're kind of pressed for time. So
yeah.
So this worked out well. Again, thank you, listeners. Do not worry. We have lots of new content coming out from both PAX West and San Diego Comic-Con. So keep your eyes on your feeds for all that extra additional content that we'll be sending your way. You can find us on social media, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. We're there all the time. We read every single tweet, so please send us one that way. If you have any general questions for us, you can send them to nerds@nerdappropriate.com. So if you have any show ideas or just want to say hey and things that you like and things that you don't like, just send us an email, nerds@nerdappropriate.com. We have a Facebook page, which is /nerdappropriate on Facebook, and basically right now we are Nerd Appropriate everywhere, so just type that into whatever you want to know about and we're there. And we'll be back hopefully next week with some all new stuff.
Hooray.
Was fun, man.